Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with EPA Director of the Office of Acquisition Management, Judy Davis. Also joining us in our conversation is Pete Boyer. Judy, the Office of Acquisition Management lists a vision, a mission, and strategic goals on its website. Could you describe these management tools and how your office developed them?
It is a well-established fact that the highest performing organizations are the ones with a vision and that all the folks in the shop are on board with the vision. So about 6 or 7 years ago, we took our managers off-site and we said, all right, where do we want to go in OAM, the Office of Acquisition Management at EPA? What do we want our vision to be? At that time, in our world, in the contracting world, there was a lot of competition going on, and organizations like GSA were marketing different agencies to get their business, and it really made us sharpen our pencil. Competition is a very healthy thing, and it made us sharpen our pencil, and we realized we were actually losing business to GSA. So the vision that we came up with was we want to become the preferred business management partners for the agency. And the way I translate that, there's a lot of big words, but I translate that into we wanted OAM to be the go-to organization for the agency, not the go-around organization. And that's how we created our vision. Then we said, okay, so what are the three biggest challenges to achieve that vision? And that's how we created our strategic goals. And we said, first and foremost, we have got to have a competent, qualified workforce because our business is very technical. You got to know how to spell contracts. You got to know how to jump over hurdles and tear down barriers to get the job done. And having a competent workforce is not a small feat. So our very first goal, strategic goal, is investing in our people. Then we said another challenge is, you know, one of the reasons that we think we're losing business is because we don't really have a great corporate image around the agency, our contracting shop. And so we got to boost that up and we got to show what we're really made of. So our second strategic goal was enhancing our corporate image around the agency with our customers. Thirdly, and I'm sure this will come as no surprise to anybody in any kind of business world, is keeping pace with IT. Our IT systems are legacy systems, and there's a big challenge for us. So our third goal is investing in information technology. That worked for us for a few years, and like all good organizations, it's always a good idea to go back and revisit your strategy. So a year or two ago, we did just that. We had another management offsite. We revisited our strategy and we said, okay, is it still working for us? What's working? What isn't working? We determined the vision is working for us. We've made great progress. We've turned around a lot of business and we've gotten a lot of our customers coming back to us and we're getting lots and lots of kudos from our customers. So that's still working for us. Still a good vision. We kept the vision to be the preferred business management partners for the agency. Our goals, we actually decided to revise some of the goals, but we kept the first one, investing in our people. Our view is that if we take care of our folks and we make sure we have a sharp, high-qualified workforce, they will take care of our customers and they'll take care of the rest. So that is still our first strategic goal. Our other strategic goals, we decided, okay, they worked for us, we made a lot of progress, but we need to broaden our focus now and be actually more outwardly focused because enhancing our corporate image was kind of inward. What can we do to do that? And IT is inward looking. So to be more outwardly focused and broader, the enhancing our corporate image goal turned into providing business leadership. We recognize it's very critical for us to be business leaders to achieve our vision. Investing in IT, we said, you know, we can broaden that too. Why are we focusing only on IT? We should be optimizing all of our business processes. So our third strategic goal now is to optimize business processes. We added a fourth one. The fourth one we added is strengthening our link to the agency mission. Why? Because we realized that, you know, we're contracting types. We spend all day long writing, negotiating, and processing contracts, and it's very easy to lose sight of why we're here. And this is to remind ourselves that it's not about contracts. It's about supporting the agency mission. The contracts we write are a means to the end, not the end in and of itself. So that's our fourth strategic goal. Every employee in OAM is familiar with our vision statement, and it's incorporated into our performance plans. And as a matter of fact, in deciding to put our money where the mouth is, our awards are directly tied to our vision statement and our strategic goal.
Excellent. Certainly developing a vision, mission, and goals is critical to the success of an organization, but many would argue that the real challenge is ensuring that employees are bought into the vision and the goals that you set out. What have you done in this area, and what advice could you give to other leaders who are thinking about establishing a new vision and goals for their organization?
That's an excellent point. How many of us know organizations that have vision statements that end up in a file drawer someplace, and the next time the subject comes up, it's, yeah, we had one of those. Let me see if I can dig it out. Well, once we had our vision statement, I was on a mission. We were not going to become one of those organizations. So what we did was we established some groups of our staff. We took a cross-cut of OAM. That means all levels, all different levels of OAM were involved. And we established one group for each of our goals. And our groups, which was the staff, our employees, came up with how they thought we as an organization could implement these goals. They came up with some fantastic ideas. For example, in terms of enhancing our corporate image, besides a lot of our outreach that we do with our customers, they came up with an idea like we could have a periodic publication that tells stories and advertises successes and focuses on our customers. And we have that now, and our folks came up with the name Bylines. That's B-U-Y, lines. And so that's done a great job of good way to communicate with our customers. Matter of fact, there's a section in there that's called Captain Contracts. That's a humorous section. And it seems like when we issue a new Bylines, that's where everybody goes to the Captain Contracts to see what kind of humor we have.
Does he have a cape?
He has a cape. He has a cape. And I got some feedback that some of our customers didn't realize that we had a sense of humor in the contracting shop. So that was a great idea. And they actually came up with the idea of the director's awards. We have a giraffe award for those who stick their neck out. We have a light bulb award for innovation. We have a wings award for one who mentors another. We have the OAM Customer Service of the Year Award. We have the Mission Made Possible Award and the Circle of Excellence Awards. And our folks came up with those ideas. So they're very, very actively engaged in coming up with how we're going to implement these goals. To maintain that, to maintain the goals, we do a number of things. First of all, our vision statement is posted all around our organization. You can't walk into our organization without seeing it. And I personally meet and greet every individual who walks into OAM to work in OAM. I do that for a number of reasons, but not the least of which is to give my stump speech, if you will, on the vision and goals and what it's all about. And so I take great pride, and I challenge anybody to find a single individual in OAM that is not only that is not familiar with our vision statement and our goals.
Most leaders take a top-down approach to vision, mission, and goals, and it sounds like you've taken a more collaborative approach, which has certainly solved a lot of the issues around employee buy-in to those points. You mentioned customers, so did you share the goals with your customers?
Absolutely. That's how we keep ourselves honest. It is not only is important for them to know what we're trying to do in OAM, but it's also important for them to give us feedback on that. We have shared them with all levels, starting with the top levels. We do an annual outreach to our customers at the Deputy Assistant Administrator level, and in the regions it's the Assistant Regional Administrator level. And in those outreach sessions, I meet with those levels and bring them up to date on current areas of the contracting arena. And that was one of the first things we shared with them after we had our vision statement was we laid it out and discussed it with them. At the division level, our division directors share it with them. They've done that annually and in other forums with their customers at the division level. At the staff level, we have a contract customer relations council that we do outreach. We meet monthly with our customers and talk about new policies and new evolutions in the contracting world. And so we shared it at that level with them as well. So we've shared it all around the agency. There is no secret. It's very, very public.
And Judy, we understand that EPA is playing a role in the response to Hurricane Katrina. Could you describe this role and what results EPA is seeing?
Oh, yes. When EPA responds in general, there are two modes in which we respond. The first is usually the response mode, in which we do emergency risk assessments and initial air and water monitoring. Longer term, we do the recovery mode, which is we continue the role of monitoring the air and the water, and we add to that collection of hazardous material, handling of hazardous material. And in the case of Katrina, that was from both households as well as what was out in the environment. We initially started out in the response mode, and we provided very specially trained personnel to conduct the emergency risk assessments in Katrina. One of the things that's little known about Katrina is the magnitude, for example, of the oil spill. We worked very closely with the Coast Guard in the oil spill. That oil spill, as a result of Katrina, is second only to Exxon Valdez. Most people don't know that because it was overshadowed by the sheer enormity of Katrina and the other issues. Had there been just that oil spill and not the rest of the impact of Katrina, that would have gotten wide publicity, but it didn't because of everything else that was going on. Now we're in the recovery mode, in which we continue to monitor and remove the hazardous waste. A big focus is on white goods. The white goods are the appliances, refrigerators, that sort of thing that have hazardous contents. And removing the white goods and computers, the household computers, that's been a huge chunk of what we've been doing down there. From a business perspective, from a contracting perspective, I have to say that EPA had an unprecedented response. And I could not be more proud of the agency's acquisition personnel. We essentially moved mountains overnight. We were there dealing with unprecedented challenges under extraordinarily intense scrutiny. It's no secret. Just a couple days after Katrina, the media inquiries started coming in. The GAO scrutiny, OMB scrutiny, IG scrutiny, everybody was scrutinizing. You couldn't turn on the news or read a paper without learning about scrutiny and all the bucks that were pouring into Katrina. I have to say that in EPA, we managed an extremely well-disciplined approach. We were meeting unprecedented emergency demands while doing that with a very, very well-disciplined contracting approach. And I'm proud to say, and maybe I shouldn't say this on the radio, but let me knock on wood, you haven't read anything in the papers about abuse of the contracting process in EPA's response to Katrina, and that's because of the quality of our folks and their ability to respond as well as they did in that emergency.
Well, that's really terrific, and I think most folks don't realize EPA's role as a first responder. Now, we also understand that EPA has a role in providing emergency response activities for other natural disasters, including tornadoes and snowstorms. Could you share some information with our listeners about this role?
Sure. Actually, for EPA, we more routinely than natural disasters, we respond to local disasters. We've had a few natural disasters like the California earthquake, a couple things like that, but more routinely we respond when the disaster, a local disaster, is too big for the local responders, that is the police, the fire, the municipalities, for them to deal with the response. That's when they call in EPA. Some examples of that are, for example, a local tire fire, or a methane lab find, or a tanker car wreck with chlorine gas release. You probably remember the Columbia shuttle disaster. We were a huge player in that one. So essentially, I think most natural disasters, FEMA plays a bigger role than we do, but we get involved in the local disasters a lot of times when there's hazardous material that needs to be addressed.
Judy, can you tell us a little bit about what steps you and your staff are taking to streamline the contracting process and what types of results you're seeing to date?
Sure. The real big one we did was empowerment of our staff. You know, when I took over as director 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, however long it's been now, there was a lot of stuff coming across my desk, and I'm asking myself, why am I signing this? Why is this coming to my desk? There are folks that are much closer to this that can handle this, and I don't think this needs to be coming up to my desk. So we took on this huge empowerment initiative, which is still ongoing. But my philosophy of leadership is you put the right people in the right jobs, you push the decisions down to the lowest level possible, you give them the right tools for them to be successful, and then you get out of their way and let them do their job. And that's exactly what we did in OAM. We've eliminated layers and layers of bureaucracy. We revamped the entire agency procurement regulations accordingly. What that did was it freed up the senior leadership of OAM so we could be focusing on the strategic direction. Where are we going in OAM? Making strategic decisions. And our contracting officers, who are closer to the work and closer to the customers, make the procurement decisions. From a procurement perspective, we're doing a lot of things that I think a lot of other agencies are doing, and nothing earth-shattering there. We're using a lot more umbrella vehicles. We call them government-wide acquisition contracts, or GWACs, multi-agency contracts, the GSA federal supply schedules. We use them to reduce lead times and increase efficiencies. That way, when a customer comes to us and says, okay, we want you to buy this for us, we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. We don't have to generate a brand new contract every time because we have an umbrella vehicle in place that we can tap into, and it saves an awful lot of time and expense to the federal government.
How is the EPA greening government procurement? We will ask EPA Director of the Office of Acquisition Management, Judy Davis, to explain this to us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.